Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
Welcome to Hannah Howard, writer of her most recent book, Plenty, a memoir of food and family. Also wrote Feast, True Love in and Out of the Kitchen?
Kitchen. Yeah.
Kitchen.
Kitchen.
A BA from Columbia, MFA from Bennington, and flipping great books, great wheels of cheese in Picheline and Fairway Market. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me back. We got to talk about Feast, and I'm so excited to talk about the new book with you.
Yes, yes. I feel I must mention that even though the book is about women, I love your love affair with your husband, Tony.
I love that you love that. And I've heard from a few people that that was their favorite part of the book. And it was really fun writing about him. And I also feel really grateful that he is generous enough to, I mean, I know it can't be easy being married to a writer who writes such personal stories. So for him to let me write about him and us and share it with the world feels really lucky to me.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear that. Because I feel like, you know, you're right. You're right, because you do write about him a lot. And the other women come and go, but it's mostly about him.
Well, I guess that's, You know, the subtitle is a memoir of food and family. And I feel like a big part of this book is about making that decision to create this partnership and family. And so ever since, you know, kind of we made that decision together, I do feel like we've been in this journey of life together very much.
Right, right. Now, that first pregnancy was awful.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote about my my miscarriage at about 8.5 weeks, and it was really devastating. I think I did know miscarriages were common, and I knew they happened, but I didn't expect it to happen to me. And when it did happen, I didn't expect it to be quite so emotionally hard.
Right, right. But I love the fact, the way that you put food into the whole book.
Yeah, I feel like food has been kind of another, right, if Tony is along for me for this journey, this my love of food and kind of discovering my people and my world through food has always been a theme of what I love and what I do and what I want to do in my life and in my writing.
Right. And your puppy, Ace.
Yes. I don't know if we can hear, but he's saying hello here. He just said hello.
I did hear him.
Yes. Yes. So he was like one of the really, because Tony, my husband, and I had chatted a bunch about getting a dog. And then we kind of put that on the back burner when I got pregnant. So getting Ace was kind of the best silver lining of this miscarriage, because then all of a sudden I was like, okay, well, we're going to get a dog. And we got an amazing dog, and he's really like, you know, he's part of the family too. And he makes home feel like home, and he brings us a lot of joy, this doggy.
Right. Yes, I could tell. So I do want to talk about the women in the book. So Wendy, interesting woman. Tell me about her.
So Wendy, I met on this trip, amazing trip I got to take to Bordeaux and Gascony in France. And she is one of the very few women barge pilots. So there's this system of canals through Europe, and they used to transport goods. And now they are pretty quiet, sleepy places. But there's this amazing network of kind of luxury mini cruises, because they just fit like four people or six people. I think the one we were on had six people. Some of them have a few more, but that's around the size. And Wendy and her husband took a trip on one of these boats, and kind of, they were in the retail clothing business and kind of fell in love with it. And it's very much a food and wine experience, because they go through these small towns, and we've visited an Armagnac producer, and we visited markets and bakeries, and they fell in love with this boat and decided to kind of change everything in their lives. They're Irish, Wendy and her husband Peter, and sell their business and buy a barge. And Wendy's one of the few canal barge captains who's a woman. And I was just so enamored with this whole world that they've created, their genuine hospitality. And it's such a cool way to see a place. I'm very much a like go, go, go kind of New York person. And the barges travel at about walking distance, so very slowly, and just kind of getting to, you know, walk by this countryside was incredible.
Oh, sounds wonderful. Sounds absolutely wonderful.
It really was.
Now, what did she do for you food-wise?
So there was also a chef on the boat. There was a couple, I guess they like to hire couples, because there's such tight quarters that if they're not a couple, that they just have to become very friendly, because there's not very much room. So there was a young couple, and there was a young man and his girlfriend who were Australian, and he was hoping to open up his own restaurant, and he was like incredibly talented chef and would cook things like from the region. And I just remember the amazing foie gras we had, and the cheeses were incredible. And a lot of them were cheeses that I was familiar with, but the kind of version from the little like cheese shop in this tiny town felt different, you know, and who knows how different the actual cheese was and how much it was about being in this gorgeous place. But it was such a cool experience, and we had a cheese plate every day, and that was definitely a highlight, maybe a highlight of my life.
Now, you said something about the cheese being better there because it's not pasteurized.
Right. I mean, that is true too, that we only get in the U.S. here, right, the cheeses that are imported have to be aged for at least, I just had like a brain pause. 60, is it 60 days or 90 days? I thought it was 60 days or 90 days. I think it's 90 days.
Right.
But they have to be significantly aged, right? So we don't get those like young, well, one of my favorite cold categories is like the ooey, gooey, kind of époisse sort of stinky cheeses. And we don't get those with raw milk here in the U.S. So right. For sure, for sure, they like really, these cheeses were just kind of a whole explosion of flavor experience. And, you know, they brought me to another place. They were an incredible, just the depth and there was like so much going on in these cheeses.
Okay. That's what I thought. And I've had those cheeses in France as well. They're mm-hmm. ridiculously delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tammy, tell me about Tammy.
Tammy is definitely, I mean, all of the women I wrote about, I admire. Tammy is a restaurateur and sommelier, and she owns a beautiful restaurant called Colonia Verde in Fort Greene, near where I live in Brooklyn. And she and her husband are also opening up a new restaurant in Manhattan. I think she just shared this news with me a few weeks ago. So this is still in the progress, but I just loved meeting this like local to me woman. She invited me into her restaurant. She invited me to attend a pre-shift wine tasting with her staff, and her passion and her genuineness and her warmth just really spoke to me. I fell in love with her restaurants and with her. And she's also a mom of two small kids. And so as I am embarking on this journey of motherhood, it was so cool to meet. Restaurant work is notoriously hard to do with a family. And it was so cool to meet someone who is managing to do it with so much grace.
Oh, good. Good. That's great. Now, tell me about Mahal. Am I saying your name right?
Yes. Yes, that's right. Mahal runs a catering business out of Long Island City in Queens called Eat Off Beat. And it was inspired by Mahal is from Lebanon. And she came to the U.S., to New York City for graduate school. And she couldn't find, like, the grocery store hummus that she was buying was totally disappointing. And she wasn't a big cook, but she asked her grandma, like, I need your hummus recipe because I am really disappointed. You know, she missed the hummus that she was used to and started to make some hummus. And then ended up building out this amazing company that cooks and highlights and celebrates food from refugee chefs who have left countries around the world. So there's a chef from Iraq, there's an Afghani chef, there's a Somali chef. I think there's chefs from something like 14 different countries, and they all cook food inspired by where they come from, but with their own spin, and their food is really good. It's super delicious. I right before the world shut down for the pandemic, they catered my baby shower, and everyone was like, this food is crazy good. And they've really had to pivot during the pandemic and you know, because they were all about these big events. And now they do all kinds of like meal packages, and they have a new cookbook out that everyone should definitely check out. And they're really an amazing group of people.
That's great. Well, it's time for a break. We'll take a little break right now. Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin, in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
So we're back after our short break. Allison, I didn't realize she got off to such a slow start finding herself. I know her.
Yes. So, yeah, Allison Hooper is definitely a cheese world hero. She's one of the founders of Vermont Creamery. But yeah, she didn't, I didn't know that either. I had always kind of looked, up to her. So to hear that she really floundered, just like most, I feel like just most young people do, trying to figure out what they want to do with their lives, where they want to be. It took her a little while to get through college. She thought she wanted to go to China and then decided against it. And but one of her kind of journeys brought her to a goat farm in Brittany in France. And she loved goat cheese before there was really such a thing available to the vast, vast majority of Americans. And she really helped goat cheese become a thing that people know and love. And she really helped the artisanal cheese revolution here happen. And it was like a really slow burn. And I think just such an example of, she wasn't like following a trend, or she was following her heart and following her, what she loved.
I know. It was quite amazing to read about her story.
And I just find her such a like warm, down-to-earth person, which is always cool to find out about someone you look up to so much.
Yes, yes, I agree. And she strikes me as that way from afar, a cool, down-to-earth person.
Definitely.
So now, what about Haley Welsh?
So I met Haley a few years ago when my husband and I found our apartment, or we found a neighborhood first in Brooklyn where we wanted to live. And then we found an apartment, and she owned the coffee shop next door and was just such a welcoming, wonderful presence as we were shifting our lives and relocating from the upper West Side to Brooklyn. And she made the place really feel like home. And she just was this kind of light in my day. Just, you know, we'd have a little conversation when I was walking the dog, or I'd stop by for a few minutes and grab a coffee. And I got to know her, and I loved talking to her and learning about her story. She's worked as a chef, and just working as a barista really captured something about her. She was really great at it. And she loved bringing people this like little bit of something good in their day, whether it was a really good day or a really hard day. And she really did that for me, and I really grew to appreciate it. And it's interesting because since the book came out, Haley ended up selling what was Cafe Eloise. It's now called Cafe Aura. She sold it to her friend, Alicia, who was a barista. And she's really kept like the spirit going, and it's still some place that I love. And you know, since then she's like hosted jazz there and clothing swaps, and kept this like really happy hub of the community alive. So it's cool to see. I really do miss Haley, but I feel like her legacy still lives on, even though she's now on the West Coast.
Now, was she the one who was trying to have a baby?
She was trying to have a baby. I think she took a break trying to have a baby during the pandemic for a while. And I'm not sure. I owe her a chat. So I don't know whether that's changed now and whether she and her wife are trying again or if they're thinking differently. But that was something that we really shared because I was trying to have a baby and then I was pregnant and she was trying to get pregnant. And so it was just nice to talk about this weird territory of like fertility and pregnancy and all the waiting that pregnancy entails.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it does. So you are pregnant again.
I am indeed. Yes, I am due with baby number two on Thanksgiving, which I love that that's my due date because it's one of my favorite holidays. And I'm starting to feel really excited and also nervous too because it's just such a big life change, but I'm also very excited.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. So now, wait, could you tell me about Paola? Paola?
Paola was another woman from the book who I met. I actually met her through her online cooking classes that she teaches. And I feel like she was ahead of the time teaching these classes online before the pandemic, now when pretty much everything moved online. And I was a little bit skeptical because I thought, first of all, I already think of myself as a very good cook. And second of all, I thought, I don't know if I want to learn cooking through my laptop. But actually, I not only had an incredible experience with her and learned a lot of new things, I also made a new friend. And we decided to go together to this conference called the Parabere Forum that happens in a different city every year. Of women in the food industry. We went to Oslo together and I met her and I met her family. And then I traveled a few months later, maybe about a year later, to see her where she lives outside of Milan. And she hosted Tony and I. And she's just been an amazing friend and amazing fellow traveler in this world of food.
Oh, excellent. Now, what about Janice?
So Janice Addison. Yes, Janice is like the first friend I think I wrote about, and she was one of the first women I bonded with in just working in restaurants together. She was a young chef. We worked together at Casa Lula, Cheese and Wine Bar, which is reopening by the way in Hell's Kitchen, which is a wonderful place, and. We just kind of hit it off and I was still in college when I worked there and she had recently graduated from culinary school. So we were really young and kind of figuring out so much and navigating this like really intense, restaurant life. And, I wrote about our trip together to Orcas Island and kind of figuring out like some of the beautiful ways that food connects us and also some of the more difficult things. She came from a Seventh-day Adventist background. So her life as a chef was really different from her family who didn't eat meat, didn't drink wine, didn't really believe in fun in a way. I don't know if that's like unfair to say, but I think she would have said something similar. So it was just like for her, food was like really a rebellion in a way, even though it was completely what she loved. And I think it really reminded me that like food, you know, it's often celebrated for all the joy that it can bring, but it also can be challenging and it can bring up like really rocky terrain and difficult relationships. And I guess like most things in life, just be really multifaceted, which involves the good and the difficult.
Uh-huh. Now, what else would you like to talk about? We've run out.
Yeah, you asked, I feel like you asked about the women in the book. I think when I first started writing the book, I was thinking more about kind of highlighting these like very famous women in the food world. And then as I got more into it, I was really more interested in people like in the trenches doing this hard, sometimes thankless, sometimes very satisfying work of crafting cheese and buying wine and teaching people how to cook. And I just was completely, especially through this last year and a half, I've just been completely amazed and inspired by their resilience, by their lack of, you know, it's been a tough time for almost everyone. And these women have yeah. not been full of like self-pity or anything. They've been like channeling all of their creativity and resources and like doing what they can. And it's just been such a inspiring gift to get to know these people in the book.
Yes, I agree. I totally enjoyed your book, by the way.
Thank you.
I really read it. I read it over. I read it this morning. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Diane. That means a lot to me. It really does. Because it's also a wild thing to like just spend so much time writing this book and then you just put it out there into the world and who knows what can happen. So to hear that just makes it feel really, it really makes my day.
Oh, good. I'm wondering what else we should talk about. Because you used up my lengthy questions to
I don't know, it's your show. I'm not gonna talk about anything. I think I'll say like a quick thing, because I wrote, you know, in my first book about struggling with an eating disorder, and then I wrote in this book about miscarriage, and I feel like both of those things were kind of tough experiences to navigate.
Yes.
And people have said like, what, you know, like, why do you,
I wondered if you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, I kind of do, because I feel like it's definitely hard. It was in my experience, I can only talk from my own experience. It was hard to write about both of those things, but it's so cool to be able to take something that feels like a painful
emotional,
yeah, just like rocky, tough experience. And then if I can turn it into something that maybe helps someone else, that somebody relates to, even that just like kind of resonates, it feels like it's some sort of alchemy. Like, I don't know, it makes it feel like it wasn't all for naught anyway. So I feel really lucky that I can do that even when it's really hard. So I just want to, like, whatever people are going through, just that reminder that you're not alone. I feel like that's been something that I keep needing to hear myself. And it's nice to be able to hopefully remind or let people know that through my work.
That's great. That's a very nice thing to say.
It's very true.
Well, and I feel like you're very sincere.
I am sincere.
Yeah. So anyway, back to the topics. Resilience. What do you have to say about resilience?
I think life gives us like I think women in the food world have all of these challenges. You know, it's a typically male dominated industry. It's a really tough industry that doesn't always extend benefits or the best pay or even the best environment to its people. And so I feel like these women that I wrote about are kind of carving out a new way. They see things in a new way. And it's pretty cool to see that sort of resilience, because yeah, there's so much from this pandemic year to what these women have gone through in their work and in their lives has been like really hard. But I think it's maybe like an oversimplification just to say that they've like persevered, but they have, and that's part of it for sure. And sometimes that also means, like, Paola worked in a Michelin star restaurant for many years, and part of her resilience was saying, like, I still want to cook and I want to be around food, but this is not the right environment for me, and carving out her own little niche that's been able to preserve what she loves, but like she now has control of her work environment. So I feel like there's lots of ways to be resilient in this industry and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you have to say about childbirth?
That's such a big question. I think there were a lot of things that were hard about. It was definitely different than I thought it was going to be. I had planned to give birth in Brooklyn, and then New York, or some of the hospitals in New York, said that partners were no longer allowed in the hospital, so you had to give birth alone. And then I frantically started to call doctors in New Jersey, where my parents live, and we found someone. And so everything was kind of different to what I had planned, and including the birth itself, right? I had this vision for an unmedicated birth, and I ended up having an emergency C-section, which was like not at all what I wanted or intended. And I think maybe that's like the kind of lesson that, even though it wasn't what I envisioned for myself at all, it was an incredible experience. And it's been a lot though. Like, I feel like it's been taking a while to process, because so much in those early days is just kind of getting through one day at a time, figuring out how to take care of a baby, figuring out how to be a mother, recovering from surgery and birth and all of that. But with time, I feel like I've started to process like just this, I guess, like other things, this mixed bag of like incredible pain and incredible joy. And definitely the joy has won out. And it's been like the biggest pleasure of my life watching this little girl grow up, for sure.
Now, do you know what you're having this time?
I don't know. It's going to be a surprise.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I like surprises.
I like surprises too, and I feel like we don't get that many happy surprises, so might as well lean into it.
Yeah, yeah. So no mistakes along the way?
Mistakes, do you mean like a pregnancy loss?
No. A blurting out of the sex.
Oh, no, they're very careful. Even at the ultrasound, they said, okay, turn away now. So, okay. Yeah. I don't know. I guess the doctors do now, but they've been very good at keeping the secret alive.
And where are you having this one?
We're actually, so one of the things that's come out of the pandemic is that we really have been enjoying spending time. I'm talking now from Frenchtown, New Jersey, this little town on the Delaware River, where my parents lived. And so we ended up kind of on a whim buying a house here, and we're going to have the baby here with the same place that I had Simone. So,
oh,
there you
good.
Go. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And Simone just started preschool here in Frenchtown. So lots of exciting things unfolding for us.
Oh, now what, how old is she?
She's 17 months old.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So you start preschool early.
Yeah. Well, this place officially starts at 18 months, but she's just close enough, I guess. And she's doing, it's only been one week and one day, but so far she's doing great. I'm very proud of her.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. So, okay. So I guess we've come to the end of our rope. I love talking to you. I was looking forward to this interview particularly, and it's gone great.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was a joy to get to talk to you.
Yes. Okay. Hannah Howard, whose book is Plenty, A Memoir of Food and Family, and whose other book is Feast, True Love, In and Out of the Kitchen. Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you, Diane.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.